The opening words this morning come from the poet Emily Dickinson, who said, "There is a golden slant of morning so lovely to behold that it comes, when it comes, the landscape stops to listen and the shadows hold their breath." For me, the beauty of each morning is part of what Emily Dickinson calls the never-ending greatness provided by ongoing hope, which is located within each person as well as between individuals and in and within communities.
Jane, our minister emerita, is going to help me a little bit with the story today. It's a very old story. It's about a time when the gods, that's the Greek gods, that is, it's a story from ancient Greece, were looking down over the world, and they found that they had made a very big mistake.
Because, you see, the gods themselves, they were actually a very, very wide, diverse, and different kind of group of people. Some were tall and thin. Some were short and wide. Some had hair that was blonde and curly, and others had hair that was dark and straight. There may even have been some people with not any hair at all, I think. And more dramatically, some were male, some were female, and a few were a bit of both.
But not so the creations that these gods had made. They had only made man. Not to be offensive, but it was a bit boring. And they had a sister themselves, Aphrodite. She was beautiful. Why hadn't they thought to make a human in her likeness? Well, they got to work. They rolled up their sleeves and started to shape and form the clay. They worried and fretted a bit because they wanted her to be just as beautiful as Aphrodite. And they wanted her to be full of goodness and kindness and joy and hope. So they worked long and hard. And then, finally, she was ready. They breathed life into her and called her Pandora, the first woman. They decided they would give her a special and challenging job. They wanted Pandora to keep guard on everything that was her opposite. And so they found an urn. I know you probably think it was a box, but according to Homer, it was an urn. And they took that urn and they began to fill it full of evil. They filled it full of anger and envy and hatred and gloom and doom. Everything that was awful. And then they took a big cork and they put that on the urn and sealed it over with wax.
And you know, if you had seen it, you would want one just like it.
It was almost as beautiful as Pandora, and then they led her down to the lower realms where humans live, and they brought that urn. And they put it in a corner of her room, and they said, "Pandora, you watch over that urn. You make sure nobody takes it, and never open it." Well, Pandora was pretty busy getting used to being alive, so she didn't pay much attention to the urn. But now and then, you know, her eyes would just happen to move to that corner of the room and she'd see it there and she would wonder, what is inside it? And, well, what would happen if I opened it? And she had no idea what was contained in there.
I mean, just imagine if you had been given a gift and told not to open it. Don't open it. Wouldn't you be curious? I mean, wouldn't you be tempted? What do you think? Do you think she should open it or not open it? What do you think?
Well, she didn't mean to, but you know, it just suddenly happened one day. She would just suddenly found her over there in that corner of the room, and then suddenly she was just pulling off the wax, and she only opened it a little wee bit. But that hatred and that gloom and doom and anger and jealousy was so strong that it pushed the cork right off. She tried. She couldn't get it back on. Not until it had flown out and spread all across the world. And then she could put it on. And poor Pandora, she felt so worried and she didn't know what to do. She sat there for a while. And then she heard a little tinkling sound coming from inside the urn. It sounded so gentle. And she thought, what could that be? And now again, her curiosity was strong. And she pulled the lid back. And what she saw brought a smile to her face. For there was a glimmer of hope. So she took that lid right off, and hope flew out into the world. And there it is.
And you know, you may be thinking, if you were listening closely to the story, what was the hope doing in with all the evil? Was that a second mistake that the gods made? Besides, first of all, forgetting to make any female kinds of persons, maybe they also forgot and put hope in. Was it just an accident, or was it done in purpose? Well, let's hope that hope can survive. If it can survive in an urn full of all the evil things in the world, maybe it can survive in our world, and we can use it to help us be the best kind of people we can be and help others do that too. So there is a reason to feel hopeful.
There is a glimmer of hope.
I have always been a defender of the underdog. I can remember as a child even wanting to be black so that I could better understand what it was like and then be able to speak more intelligently in defense of racial acceptance. Well, my skin color never changed, but in a way I did get my wish. I turned out to be transgender and queer, not just pasty white. I have my very own personal set of differences to live with, speak up for, and defend. And it's not always been easy. As a member of this church community, those difficulties are fading from my life. Not only have I found a place where I feel welcome, but as a worship associate, I have found a way to turn my particular life experiences, the good and the bad, into something positive. Something that might just help others find their way. And so I feel hopeful for my human family, thinking that if my life can be so dramatically changed with love and acceptance, then so can the lives of others. And this world then can become a better place, one person at a time. This past month, however, I've had a bit of difficulty hanging on to that hope. If all the terrorist attacks, wars, and refugee crises hadn't been enough to fling me into deep despair, its backlash of mistrust and hateful xenophobia had. The sheer magnitude of the amount of work that needs to be done to heal this world overwhelmed me and made my contribution seem inconsequential. But then something quite miraculous happened. A fellow church member posted a message of hope on our Facebook page. And that led me to another message, and then another. And then pretty soon I was also sharing those messages. Then our membership decided to sponsor a refugee family, and the weight on my heart lifted. I felt like celebrating because I suddenly realized that our UU faith is not just based on the belief that each individual has a spark of love inside of them. But together we keep that flame burning in each other. With each of us doing our small part, we can keep that hope alive. And with that hope, I believe we can make a real difference in this world. I know it has made a huge difference in mine. I invite you now to enter a space where truth speaks without words. It is a time to go slowly. It is a time to breathe deeply.
It is a time to think gently. In fact, to suspend thought. We must go slowly. There isn't much time. Let me just say to all of you that it remains a privilege and a pleasure to be able to preach occasionally from this pulpit. Well, as you have been told already, the theme for this month of November it would be nice if it were November still, but it's not, it's December. The theme for this month, I'll get it right eventually, Melora, just keep listening. The theme for this month of December is hope. And this morning I hope and intend to explore many of hope's meanings and practice with you leaning into the light. Growing up, I had a very secure, caring family. And although there were times when life was not that hopeful, I was a very small child when my father was declared missing in action, I think in Normandy. But apart from that, and he did come home, I always assumed that the family would look after me. And as long as I didn't get in the way, which I sometimes did, that was the truth. They did look after me. When I dipped into my memories of being an adult, I found that my first recollection of hearing about hope was the phrase, for some of you this may be the same perhaps, it was the phrase, "Hope is the thing with feathers," from an Emily Dickinson poem. It seemed very strange at first reading. "Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me." The metaphorical point I deduced was that home is like a bird, singing in one's soul and sitting in one's soul, singing a wordless tune, cheerfully and knowing nothing could ever permanently conquer it. You are not required to do anything for hope. It just is, if you will let it be. Of course, it would take a whole essay to properly explore what Emily meant, and I remember thinking it was still all rather weird. And yet here, 30 years later, that was the first thing I thought of when I thought of the word hope. In the December newsletter, Reverend Shauna asked the question, what is this thing called hope? When I looked it up in the dictionary, it told me that hope is a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen, and a feeling of trust. It is not a fact that needs to be proven. It is rather an awareness, a sort of a sense that something has importance and value, and at some point can be accessed to work towards a better future. Well, just what are some of the meanings of hope? I believe hope contains both possibility and potential. That is, to be hopeful is to keep an open mind and heart through listening and observing what is going on around you. It means to pay attention and participate even when you'd rather not. The possibility of hope is not a fluffy, easy thing, in my opinion. It is more like a gritting of the teeth, an understanding that hope will happen when it happens, not when you want or pray or scream or demand that it happens. As our prolific friend Anonymous says, hope is a happiness held in the heart when happiness seems to be gone. Happiness is a held in the heart when happiness seems to be gone. It is a reason to go on living, even if sometimes it can be a rather bittersweet reason. In Unitarian Universalist terms, I believe hope is a courageous and necessary adventure of mind, heart, and spirit. Hope's potentiality is mysterious and immense, but until proven otherwise, it's probably better than the alternative. And sometimes, as the story that Faye shared about Pandora's urn, it is completely unexpected and even puzzling. I mean, why would hope be found in an urn with evil things that are not supposed to be beautiful, like war and hatred, pain and suffering? Was it simply another mistake of the gods, like forgetting to make a female image in the first place? Some of you, however, must be wondering about the second part of my sermon title. What is it? Let me read it out to you. Hope, possibility, and potential, and how being a glacial erratic helps. Well, as one of my fellow singers said to me, it does make sense, Jane, to combine talking about hope with telling us about your recent trip, where you learned about glacial erratics, because surely planning and taking a trip is about hope. You hope you will see and experience all sorts of new and unexpected things, and maybe even some of the things you were expecting. And so it was. This summer, I took a trip to Newfoundland and Labrador. I had thought about where I wanted to go in Canada and where I had already been, and realized that this was the one place I had not explored at all. When I looked into tours, I realized that only a tiny bit of any tour included the Labrador coast, and so I decided to arrange my own tour to get there, to get a feel for this fairly large part of Canada. I went as far north as a place called Nain by boat, and the ocean is in effect the highway for folks living on the Labrador coast. In order to get anywhere, they must take a boat. I noticed with shock, I don't know if you've all had this experience and I'm just a little naive, that it was more expensive to buy water on the boat than it was to buy a soft drink. Whoa, that's kind of shocking to me. One of the coastal stops was at Natuashish, it was called, one of the worst communities for addictions and crime on the coast. When we arrived, there were four, count them, four policemen waiting on the dock for us to inspect our boat. I'm not sure if they were expecting somebody to come back to Natuashish and knew they would be looking for trouble or just what the reason was, but there they were. But at the same time, there was, in a large sign right on the dock or just off the dock, I thought it was rather ironic, a handwritten sign that had only four words on it: peace, love, respect, and laugh. And I thought, whoa, that is wonderful. I mean, that happens to be just about what I would call my own life view. I was also fascinated by the explanation of glacial erratics we were given. These are rocks. Some of you will know all about this. Some of you will never have heard of it before. I was one of those ones who'd never heard about it before. Glacial erratics. Not erotics, erratics. These are rocks or boulders that have been pushed by a glacier for many miles and countless years. So until they finally come to rest. And when they do, they differ from the size and type of rocks that are native to the area in which they now rest. And some of the rocks have been tumbled over and over so much that they have become round and smooth. I found myself fascinated by this whole idea. I hadn't thought about that there would be rocks that bore no relevance to anything else around it. And I wondered how I could translate this into my life as well as bring some more clarity and understanding about hope. That is, I have been myself somewhat pushed and dragged around by life, and I will admit I have turned out to be rather round. You're not supposed to laugh at that. And I am in an area very different from where I started out, which was the prairies, one of the prairie provinces. So then I thought to myself, yeah, but so what? Do I have to treat this as an errata, that is a mistake? Or can I celebrate my differentness, share any wisdom I may have gained, and fit in enough to be part of the other round, square, or irregularly shaped glacial errata, also wanting to be appreciated and included? Well, I think I'm going to try that. And I invite any of you who consider yourself having the potential to be, or maybe are, glacial errata to join me. But most of all, even though glacial errata is very important, it was the Labrador and Newfoundland sense of humor that I enjoyed the most. It was self-deprecating and often unexpected. As we were traveling around Newfoundland in our tour bus, the second part of my trip, when we would stop at a hotel where we were going to be staying for a day or two, the hotel manager would always come out to the bus to welcome us personally. And always someone would call out, "Tell us a joke!" And without fail, and without stopping to think about it, the humor would surface. One manager, for example, I will only share one of these with you, told us about an older man who just may have had dementia, who went to his doctor and said that he no longer needed any medication to help him because God was looking after him. The doctor asked him what he meant, and he said, well, for example, whenever he needed to urinate at night, God would turn on the light so he could see where he was aiming, and that when he was finished, God would then turn off the light. The doctor was quite puzzled by this and asked his wife if she had any idea what he was talking about. The wife thought about it and then said, oh, good grief, he's peeing in the refrigerator again. I guess you're feeling glad that there's only one story I brought. But I watched your faces. Not many of you got it ahead of time. It's amazing. And then there was also the sign on the tour that said, my opinion may change, but not the fact that I am always right. Newfoundland, Labrador, and humor always seems to face looking at oneself rather ruefully as well as forgivingly. This can be incredibly powerful. Now, you may think that I have forgotten to tie in glacial errata with more clarity for hope, but no. It's just that glacial errata also has ironic, humorous incidents to it, elements to it, so that it seems to fit in right here. In other words, after I've talked about the humor. Hope is not static. That's why so many glacial erratics need to be involved. It has a need for movement, that is hope. It has a need to be reminded it is needed. It has a need to be ready to respond. Surely glacial erratics are superbly suited to this task, as they are already always ready to be needed, always available to activate hope, or at the least, whichever way you want to look at it, to irritate hope into paying attention. In truth, though, we all need to be ready to keep ourselves alert for the many times when hope can be available, must be available. And what can do to help us all is to remember to lean into the light, to lean into the light where hope lies in wait. And yes, it can often take an interminably long amount of time to happen. But it's better than if it never came at all. And now, as we leave this place, let us walk softly, speak truthfully, love gently, breathe deeply, live wisely, keep hope alive for all. Now go in peace. May it ever be so.